Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1016. Hey, Washington, D.C. I'll be at the D.C. Improv September 5, 6, 7. And then the following weekend, I will be at the Chicago Improv September 13, 14. You can either go to those websites or ID10T.com/tour. And there's new stuff up at ID10T.com. We're posting some horror-themed socks and some... horror-themed, yes, horror-themed socks, all right, because they're fun, and some new shirts, some new ID10T shirts, and some other fun stuff, so go there more soon. Also, events at ID10T.com will get you your thing, if we can get to it. We get a lot if we do the best we, please don't be upset if we don't, we're trying. Okay, anyway, disclaimers aside, here's Jeff Baker, who writes, "For a while, I've been noticing I have to censor myself when singing my favorite songs around my kids because of the inappropriate content, so I started making up new comical lyrics to replace any offensive content. They were such hit with my family and friends that I started posting them on YouTube. The channel is called NSFK Music, and you can find it by going to nsfkmusic.com. An example of what you might find, What I Got by Sublime, I replace I Got a Dalmatian, I Can Still Get High, I Can Play the Guitar Like a Motherfucking Riot with I Got a Dalmatian, I Can Give High Fives, I Can Play the Guitar Like Your Mother Fighting Rabbits." Now, that is family-friendly, Sublime OC fun. I also currently have Closer by Nine Inch Nails and Bounce by Tenko Jones and more to come. Now I need to hear Closer. I need to hear family-friendly Closer by Nine Inch Nails. Also, Chris Frodell writes, Frodell. I'm sorry, Chris, that must be the bane of your existence, people saying Frodell or Frodell. My wife Melanie has taken her passion for travel and become a travel agent for Living with the Magic Vacations, a woman-owned run vacation planning agency. She uses her know-how to get you and your family to any destination you desire. Through her, you can book your vacations to Disneyland and World. You can go to Universal, Sandals Beaches, cruise lines. From fast passes to dining plans to excursions and everything in between, she'll help you get there. Find your magic and contact Melanie today. Go to livingwiththemagic.com/Melanie Frodell, F-R-O-D-E-L bio. Or just go to livingwiththemagic.com and find her under Meet the Team. Also, a friend of the LA comedy community, Jazz Ponce, and her mom, Melinda, have a GoFundMe up. Jazz used to run a show called Tiger Lily in LA. And they've just hit some financial troubles. And Jazz works for the school system and doesn't go back to work until September. And her mom was in a car accident, which is has kind of sent their world into a bit of a tailspin and an upheaval. So I just wanted to give a shout out to her GoFundMe. It's a fund that just really just kind of gets them through until mid-September while her mom is convalescing. So if you go to GoFundMe and you search for Melinda and Jazz Accident Emergency, you'll find it. And just sending hugs to Melinda and Jazz and all the best wishes and hoping that everything rights itself really soon. All right, this episode is Brian Posehn. Brian Posehn! Who's back on the podcast now. Admittedly, this was recorded several months ago, and I still have a couple that have just been pushed because, I don't know, other ones come in that are like, this has to go up right now. And so, I don't know. I don't have a really solid excuse because I loved this episode and I love Brian. I adore him and I've known him for, oh my God, 25 years now. And so I humbly apologize for this going up several months later than it should have. But Brian is on tour right now. He has a bunch of shows. He's in Arlington at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House, September 12, 13, 14. He's in Seattle at the Neptune Theater, September 20 and 21. Then he goes to Athens, Georgia. Then he goes to Hamden, Connecticut, Chicago, Illinois, Portland, Cincinnati, and Grand Junction, Colorado in December. If you go to brianposehn.com, you can get info and ticket links to all these shows. You should definitely see him in person if you get a chance. Also, he's got a great podcast called Nerd Poker, which is basically D&D. He always referred to D&D as Nerd Poker. So you should check that out if you get a chance. And Brian Posehn has a book. It is called Forever Nerdy, Living My Dorky Dreams and Staying Metal, available wherever books are sold. So find him, see him, support him. Brian Posehn, I adore you, and I'm sorry this podcast is going up a few months later than it should have. But here is episode 1016 of the ID10T podcast with Brian Posehn, Slayer!
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Lando or Vader?
Either. Lando, yeah. Man, if you got one of these glasses before the movie came out or before you, your mom took you to see the movie, you'd be pretty mad at Burger King. It's a spoiler glass.
Oh, the whole thing is a spoiler.
It tells the whole story.
I think we discovered that, too.
Yeah, Lando betrays. He's known to Han to be an accomplished con artist.
An opportunistic
scoundrel. Lando betrays Han to Darth Vader, but later regrets his action and assists in the escape of the Millennium Falcon and its crew. Spoiler.
So because of a Whopper, because you had a Whopper, and you're like, God damn it! No, you see the fucking...
Mom, why did you get those stupid glasses? I thought you liked them.
You think too much.
Chewbacca, Mom.
That is kind of fucked up. I mean, I guess maybe they just assume that at that point everyone has seen the movie, but I don't know why they had to.
Yeah.
I mean, did they put it on the back there? Because if you get that glass at Burger King, you're like, I don't know who this man is.
Right.
Let's see. What does this one say? Oh, this is obviously a reproduction because it refers to the Sith. I have the Darth Vader glass and it says, the Dark Lord of the Sith, once a Jedi Knight, now draws his incredible evil powers from the dark side of the Force. As chief enforcer of the Galactic Emperor, Vader commands the... It's a little hard to read because of the
because of the
image on the back of the glass.
But it doesn't say, like, Luke's dad.
Vader commands the executor... Executor. Most fearsome of the Imperial Star Destroyers, Vader hires Boba Fett, the notorious bounty hunter, who tracks the Millennium Falcon and its crew to Cloud City on the gaseous planet of Bespin. Concerned that Luke Skywalker grows ever stronger with the Force, Vader seeks to lure him to the side of evil. So this is interesting because this is obviously a collector series from Empire, but is it weird that they refer to the Sith in something that's...
Right.
I mean, obviously, I know it's all...
So that's a repro?
That's a repro. That one, I think, is yours, I think, is actually an original, and as you can tell by the shape of the glass. Yeah. But the thing that's weird about it is... Because that is... They did retcon. It's obviously retcon. The Sith are a retcon, but still...
It feels weird on an Empire Strikes Back glass to refer to the Sith.
Yeah.
Oh well. How are you with the Sith? Do you like that whole storyline?
Which thing? How they've.
Well, just basically evil Jedis.
I don't know that I hate it, because I think I was always vague about it as a kid. I never completely got why Vader had turned on his buddy, you know?
Yeah.
But you just knew that he did.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
They put more story behind it, I guess, than...
Yeah, the retconning in Empire was pretty bad for Star Wars, though. He's like, you said Vader betrayed and murdered my father. Well, I mean, he was, you know, when he became, then he that killed the good. So what I told you was from a certain point of view.
Right,
I don't know if that, really holds any water. Well, this holds water. It's a glass, but I don't know if that story holds water.
Right.
Were you angry about that when you saw it as a kid, or did you just go, well, makes sense?
No, I didn't get angry about that. I was more like, I hated Jedi just because of the obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But Empire was totally in.
And yeah.
Empire loved all the way through. That's still my favorite, I think.
It's still the best one.
But Jedi was a teenager when, and most of my friends had already turned on it, you know, because they were driving cars and getting laid. And but driving cars to get laid, and I was still taking the bus to movies, and so I was fired up about Jedi, but my friends weren't. And then I saw Jedi, and I had some problems.
Does anyone take the bus to get laid? Taking the bus to get laid.
How'd you get here? Don't worry about it.
Is that a bus pass in your pocket? No, you're a bus pass. That doesn't even make any sense. Yeah, Jedi, I was, because I'm just a few years younger than you, so I was in the right age range to have appreciated.
And...
it was like, oh, this is fun, and look at these little guys, you know. But of course, as I got older, it was a change.
I had everybody telling me to let it go. Like, my mom, my family, like, because I loved, you know, the toys, and the figures came out. Like, well, the first movie came out when I was 11. So, but by the time the first wave of action figures came out, I think I was 12, and most of my friends weren't playing with action figures. But I was like, "This is the best thing ever!" And I've been waiting for these, and then had a couple of years with them. But I remember being, you know, in high school, and my grandparents were like, "No, we're not getting you toys anymore. Like, that's weird."
I'll show you. I'll buy them for the rest of my adult life.
Yeah. And then my friends were obviously like, "Nah, we're not seeing Jedi." Well, yeah, go ahead, you know. I was like, "No, I still love this thing."
Are you still friends with any of those people?
I am. I went back to being friends with them, but yeah, I walked away from some of them at high school. But
sure,
now a lot of them stayed in my little tiny town.
And I'm sure now they're like, you know.
My metal buddies were always cool. I had two metal friends that are still like my two best friends in life, but. And we stayed close the whole time.
I want to dissect a little bit and explore the crossover between metal culture and nerd culture, because when I was growing up, things were very this or that, and now everyone is a bit of everything just because we're all exposed to everything.
Yeah, for sure.
And everything is easy to. I think a lot of it in those days is that, you know, like. Really deep cut metal music was hard to acquire. Really, like nerd toys were difficult to acquire.
Right.
You know, Monty Python episodes were difficult to acquire. Like, in those days, in the 80s, in the late 70s, in the 80s. And so everyone was sort of the byproduct of how much work they were willing to put into something, which was driven by how passionate they were about it. Now everything is so easy to get that it doesn't fucking matter. But when I was growing up, the metalheads were like Heshers, and I did not know that there was a nerd. I didn't know that there was a nerd component to that. But then meeting you, and obviously being friends with Rob Zombie all these years, like, wait, there's like a huge component.
Right.
It seems.
Well, me and my close friends, we were the metalheads that the other metalheads didn't like, you know. And then there were the stoner, because I didn't smoke pot in high school or till 21, I think, I started smoking pot. And I hated the stoners at my school because they were just AC/DC dumbasses and didn't like the other stuff. They didn't know who Yngwie Malmsteen was, and you know, and it was me and my two buddies that were kind of, one guy was a computer guy and is still my, like, and this is, you know, 83 when you had to be rich to have a computer, and
right.
He had a home computer, and you know, was that kind of kid. And then the other kid was learning to play the bass, and we were like three smart dorks that liked this really heavy, aggressive music. But we were like, you know, before we could drive, we were taking buses to Santa Rosa to get music and look for this obscure stuff. And, you know, hated the guys that just listened to AC/DC and Judas Priest. We were like, ah, those bands are great, but there's so much more, you know. Like,
Right. Because that's sort of the starter kit.
Right.
Right.
We had moved beyond. We're like, oh, I got this Metallica demo and this other thing. And, you know, and I just heard about this guy from Sweden and, you know.
Well, wait, this might be kind of fun. Let's talk about subculture starter kits. And these are the starter kits that, if you just have these things, probably annoy the real hardcore fans. Kind of like what you just said.
Right, right.
So what's in the metalhead starter kit? Is it like Back in Black, is like AC/DC?
Yeah. And then back then, I mean, what I hated was, I was a big Def Leppard fan till the third record. And then the third record came out, and my whole school loved it.
Because it was real, like, poppy. That was
Pyromania.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck you guys. Like, High and Dry is the shit. This band turned on me. And, you know. And now all the jocks are listening. Go back to Springsteen and Madonna. Stay away from Def Leppard. Because they went like mainstream.
Totally
they
mainstream.
They weren't just metalheads. Metalheads in my school liked High and Dry like I did. But then the next record, Pyromania, it just took over the whole school. And I remember at the beginning of the year, this is so dorky, I was still riding the school bus. I don't think – my mom didn't – we didn't have money. But so my first car was given to me by my grandfather, not probably till I was a senior, I think. So my junior year, I was still taking the school bus and like bringing a boombox on the bus. This is so how 80s it was. And I would play – I played Pyromania when it first came out. And people are like, turn that off. And by the end of the year, everybody was wearing those Union Jack t-shirts mm-hmm. from Pyromania. And
yep.
It was just, that's what really made the, like, F you. Like, or, you know, I already said fuck you.
So what is it about hardcore fandom? Because the same thing happens certainly in the...
I think it's like anything where it's yours. And
right.
then when
and you put in all the work.
Yeah, and then people... like it, but not for the same reasons as you did. It's,
and you
it's
don't
like
want to have anything in common it's with like, those people,
yeah,
right?
It's
is that
like,
part of it too?
Yeah, but it's also like we liked the Simpsons at the, you know, when the Simpsons was on, Tracy Ullman. I was hanging out with these skateboarder guys, and we loved that. And then like 2 years later, everybody else is in the Simpsons and saying cowabunga, dude. And we're like, oh, you idiots. Like, that's not what's, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a lot of things that's because you have that. I don't know how to explain it, but where you get in at that bottom floor,
yeah.
And then anybody else who gets in later and then kind of doesn't get why they're into it, you know, that's where the anger comes from.
Because then I wonder
the
sometimes,
nerd rage
like,
of,
Are we into those things, or are we just into like early adopter culture? And then the second it's not like an early adopter thing anymore, then is it that is that the thing that we're chasing? It's like finding that sort of Indiana Jones of pop culture things,
right.
Where you're going into the trenches and you're digging it up and you're unearthing this stuff, and then other
right.
people, you're like, I didn't even make any effort for that. I put in all this
right.
work.
Right, but then also because they like the obvious thing. Like, I like his hair. You know, like, Bart Simpson's funny. He's yellow. You know, but
he says,
you know what I mean? Or, yeah, or whatever it is. Where Def Leppard, it's like, I like the lame song. I like Photograph. Or I like, you know, the popular song. And you're like, ah!
Yeah, I remember going to a one of the maybe two parties I went to in high school. And it was when I had just moved out to L.A., and every time I moved to a new city, because we moved a few times, I got to be what I would later refer to as Capital City Millhouse, where it's like where I got a grace period where people didn't know yet what a fucking dork I was.
Yeah.
And so I got that grace period where I could, you know, I was new and I stayed quiet in the beginning, so then some of the cool kids would be like, "Hey, come to this party." And then, you know, within an hour or so, I was doing comedy bits or be like, "Hey, did you hear Bobcat Goldthwait's album?" You know, right. Like just doing people's like, bits. No, here's some Emo Phillips jokes. And they didn't want to hear Emo Phillips jokes.
Right.
They wanted to, you know, get drunk and do drugs and have sex with each other. And so, but I remember being at one of these parties when I first moved out to LA and Def Leppard came on. And when I lived in Memphis, Def Leppard was like hardcore. Like the people, like they would write in pen like Def Leppard on their fingers, like the little knuckle joints.
Uh-huh.
Here. And this party that had all these football players and cheerleaders, and they were drunk. And Pour Some Sugar on Me came on. I was like, "Oh, Def Leppard, really?" And they were all singing Pour Some Sugar on Me at the top of their fucking lungs, and it confused the shit out of me because I didn't know that that transition had occurred.
Right.
That Def Leppard had now spilled over into,
especially by that record.
Yeah.
That's the one after Pyromania. That's Hysteria, and that one, like, it was all over. And by then, I was so into way heavier stuff that I didn't even buy that record. But Pyromania was one that I bought, and then it went meh. Like it went, it turned rotten. Like the record, you know.
Yeah.
It spoiled.
Yeah.
When other people got into it.
I mean, I guess it would almost be like. In, you know, if Sid Vicious had lived in the late 80s, if Kiss FM started playing the Sex Pistols,
right.
You'd be like, what the fuck is happening?
Right. And I had already had music turn on me. Like, I talk about it in my book of, like, having, Star Wars betrayed me later. Well, actually, no, because the holiday special I talk about in the book, where the holiday special should have been our sign as, like, the older, you know, first-level nerds of Star Wars that got into it, you know, as 11-year-olds. And then 2 years later, this piece of shit comes out, and it's so misguided and so, like, the humor is so terrible.
Oh, the Christmas special?
Yeah, of the holiday special.
But it's still hard to deny B. Arthur.
Yeah, and it introduces you to Boba Fett in the animated thing, but which is still so kick-ass. But I remember that being one of the first things of, like, hey, this thing I like might not be perfect.
But now that you get a better sense of how things work, it's easy to understand this little space opera that no one thought was going to be anything all of a sudden is one of the most biggest worldwide phenomenon in the world.
So ABC's like, we want that for
That's
Christmas.
Exactly right. Yeah, and they didn't have the protocols in place because they didn't have nerds that worked for
them. Right.
They were like, this is how you need to
honor
this material.
Bruce Valanche. Hey, Bruce Valanche, come yell at this script.
So they just
bring a tight T-shirt.
Yeah, they're like, well, this is popular, so whatever. These kids are dumb. They don't fucking give a shit. Just put some Yodas in. You know, it's like in Raising Arizona where what did he have on his pajamas? I don't know. They were jammies. They had Yodas and shit on
them.
Like,
and shit,
it's just like Yodas and shit, which I think is kind of how
for sure
how that stuff is was programmed. And I wonder if when they were making it, they were like, I don't know, guys. I don't think this is great. Ah, it's fine.
I'm sure because the cast were all drunk and phoning it in. I mean, Hamill looks wasted. Carrie, you know, is out of her mind probably when she shot that thing.
I mean,
she's barely in it.
That experience must have can you imagine just because we all now are in our careers, we all do a million things. Yeah. And one little thing, and it's usually like the things that you're not really, you know, like, I just did this small little thing that blows up as opposed to the thing that you like, this is so important, you know? And so can you imagine like what that would feel like if all of a sudden just like one little thing you did that you thought no one was ever going to see not only becomes one of the biggest things in the world, but also defines you and does all this stuff. Have you ever thought about like, would you want that kind of weird success?
I don't know. Yeah. but I think like Harrison Ford is the guy who still is like, I wish I never did that thing. Do you feel you interviewed him, right?
I've had him. Yeah.
There is like a sense of like,
I will say this very sincere. I will say this very sincerely. I will say this very sincerely. And I don't mean this as a joke, but there was I noticed in my experiences with him personally there seemed to be a dramatic difference. The line of demarcation was landing his airplane on the golf course when he was in that plane crash,
right,
that he walked away from.
Uh-huh.
The before that, he was a little like, what is this? Come on. You know, yeah, like where
yeah, yeah.
That person asked him a question at the panel we were doing at Comic-Con the year before, 2 years before, like, oh, what would Han Solo say if he met Indiana Jones? And he was like, hello. You know, right, like he was right, just, yeah. You could tell. But then after that happened, when I did the panel for Force Awakens, he was genuinely checked in and like moved and seemed appreciative.
Huh.
And so I wonder if there was just that sort of like he just kind of had that, you know, like, oh, wait a minute. Life is precious. And
yeah, maybe
it's lucky that we get to do all these crazy things.
Yeah, for sure. You would think it would have come earlier than that. But
you know what, though?
It takes crash landing a plane, yeah.
But honestly, our culture is so different now, particularly with how fandom is dealt with, and particularly how performers and studios people respond to fandom, because he was famous at a time when famous people could be invisible or untouchable,
right,
or didn't really, I mean, there were tabloids, but not like now.
Right, right.
And so, you know, like the people who were super famous in the 80s, any time before the 90s, really were able to live these sort of isolated lives.
Right.
So, I don't know. I just wonder, like, that's got to fuck with your head.
Right. And I think he's just not a nerd probably about anything. I get the feeling. Because Hamill definitely is.
1,000%.
And Hamill, like, is so much more appreciative, I think, of the nerd fame because he loves other things. Like, I think he gets the obsession. And I think maybe Harrison doesn't have that thing that he's obsessed about. You know, never collected anything or ever, you know. I don't know.
When you and Patton and Jerry Duggan and Blaine Capatch and all of us used to play D&D.
Yes.
Dave Anthony would show up sometimes like in a leather jacket and just knock on the door and be like, I'm going to kick your ass, you fucking nerds. And then he would just leave.
Or yeah. And he threatened to do that all the time too. Like if he knew about the game,
yeah,
like, I'm coming by.
So that character that he was playing, imagine if that guy got super famous because of a D&D thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, the guy who's like, what are you fucking nerds? Keep it down.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's over and she, you know, she took her top off and you guys are fucking ruining it. You know, like if that guy all of a sudden.
That's exactly right.
There would have to be like,
don't let Dave hear this. I'm Harrison Ford. No, Dave.
There would have to be a love-hate relationship with the thing. It's like the thing did make you famous and gave you money and notoriety and a lot of things, you know. But at the same time, it was a thing that you didn't necessarily respect, and then that's tacked to your identity for
him. And like his three biggest movies are franchise movies.
Right.
Harrison Ford's. Like his three biggest characters are like, they're characters there,
right,
and they're mainstays in nerd culture, all three of them.
Yeah.
And that must drive him crazy, too. If you already hate nerds and then it's like, oh, I did another nerd thing? God, I didn't.
Yeah, but this guy had a whip. How's that nerdy?
Yeah, yeah.
Come on. Ladies love him. What? I don't get it. He's just trying each time.
Right.
So then he just dovetails into the Tom Clancy novels. It's like, no nerds are coming into these waters.
It's only going to be conservative nerds, gun-toting nerds.
I mean, I guess I don't know if it's that he hates nerds. I just wonder. I don't know.
I might be building that up too, but like, there seems a little bit of he never did like what Lucas did or what, you know, Shatner did in that famous SNL sketch of like, get a life, you fucking losers.
Right,
you
know, right, right. Right.
Because Lucas definitely did that to us, but.
You're still carrying around the.
Oh, yeah.
You still haven't made peace with that as you're getting older?
No, I'm still mad at that dude.
How do you explain? Okay, so here's what I want to know. How old is Rhodes now?
9.
Rhodes is 9. And I assume he loves all the same shit you love.
Yes. And it's been really hard with the prequels because I in the beginning, when he's little, and I was like, those suck.
But like he probably would have loved those. I heard kids
right,
love
well,
the
he loves them.
Yeah.
And now, because I've totally pulled back on it, you know, and it took me talking to Melanie, too, of, you know, who you know very well,
yes,
my wife, of her just going, well, yeah, don't do that.
He needs to know.
And then I felt bad because there was like I, you know, my stand up and my life are they're the same, you know. And I did a stand up bit about how those movies weren't going to even be allowed in my house. But then, you know, you can't really stick to that. And so then once they were in, then I sat down, and now I've like moved back a couple of steps. I'm like, well, the last two don't suck as much as the Phantom Menace. Well, you know, Phantom Menace, that I'm still holding on to. That movie is a mess, and it was really made for kids, and then there's a lot of misfires in it, and, you know, Jar Jar being just one of them. You know, I think that Pod Race, and it's just so cartoony, and just the tone was so not what I wanted to see from a Star Wars movie, and still isn't.
But I think
and
there are
it
some
goes political and
yes, like, it does,
and becomes messy. And
but there are some fun. There are some fun rabbit holes to go down, which I think would be great ways to bond with your kid or anyone's kid. But you know, there are fan theories that Jar Jar Binks is actually a Sith Lord,
right?
And,
right,
and that and yeah. that E.T. was actually a Jedi because there is like a little cluster of
no,
ETs.
I love those little things too.
Yeah, those are kind of fun.
But before my son, so I only saw those movies, the first of the prequels, I only saw Phantom twice, mm-hmm. you know, which is compared to me seeing, you know, Empire 200 times or right. whatever, who knows?
Right.
Who knows at this point how many times I've seen that movie. But I went, it came out, we, speaking of Patton, we had tickets to see that movie, you know, weeks in advance, and it was coming out on a Friday. And then a screening came up at what's the little theater here in Silver Lake?
The Vista.
The Vista.
Yeah.
So it was going to be at a Vista on Thursday night. So the night before, Patton goes, "Hey, let's go to this midnight screening." And I already have tickets for the next day. And we go, and we fucking hate it. And we walk out, and we're standing in front of the Vista, and I'm like, God damn it, I have tickets to see this stupid thing at noon tomorrow. And I went the second time, and the second time I'm just even, you know, there's no joy in my body. Like, because when I went in the first time, I was like, this is going to be great. And then it's like, no, it's not. And then now the second time, I'm like, whoa. Yeah, that's that part I hated last night.
When it came out, because we were still doing a show at the Gypsy Cafe in Westwood.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
yeah.
right across the street from those two theaters, the Fox and the Bruin.
Right.
And I remember performing for like a couple of weeks. People were lined up and camped out in front of that theater.
Yeah.
Which I don't – it doesn't happen anymore because people don't, you know.
Disappointment.
Is that what that was? But that was like
– And then
– Weeks.
So that's the only two times I saw that movie till my son got into them. You know, I never went back to them because I was so – I hated them so much. And then the other two I just saw once.
Did you show him the films in the order in which they were in release
order? Originally – no, originally I just showed him the originals. I don't know how we – I think it was getting them on Blu-ray. You had it, there was a box set at Target once, and it came with all six.
Yeah.
And so then once we had those other three in the house, that's how he got exposed to them. And I think it might have been a nanny or, you know, and I was like, don't. And I come home, you're fired.
I told you not to. This was in the lockbox with the gun.
Yes.
The fuck?
Don't let the baby see the prequels.
He has the gun. That's fine. Just keep him away from episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Have him shoot the prequels.
Do you have do you think we're in – is there a glut of Star Wars now, or are you of the mindset of like, no, the more Star Wars, the better? Or are you like, maybe a little too much?
The more the better, as long as it's well done. And I'm not one of the guys that hated Solo. I actually dug it, and I was anti before it. I've come way – I mean, I've matured a lot about my nerdiness, and part of it is when you see all the hateful nerds on, you know – online, you just go, I don't want to be that dude. And maybe I was that dude.
Yeah.
You know, I remember being mad at like, and not for a racist reason, but like Daredevil casting, you know, like when Kingpin was cast. And now looking back on that, it's like, I don't want to be the piece of shit who says, no, that Ving Rhames shouldn't play the Kingpin. You know what I mean? Like any of these people that are, you know, getting online about that kind of stuff, it's like, you can love that stuff. But the negativity has just made me go the other way. It's like, you know, it's like in my act too of PC culture, of like people going anti on PC culture. I'm like, well, I'm going to go the other way. You know, I'm going to be so politically correct.
So again,
that you fuckers really hate me.
So you're
such a contrarian.
You're I always a counterculture
have been.
Guy.
Yeah, always have been.
I wonder if fandom is, you know, I've been asking some friends about this. Do you think fandom's broken right now, or do you think it's just
no. I don't know. And it's hard because you go, I want fandom to be inclusive. I even do a rant in my book of like of that, of going, hey, look, you know, this is the people that really get obsessed over these things, generally it's because, well, for me, that was my solace. That was my thing that was waiting for me at home mm-hmm. when I was going through like what I thought the worst days of my life, you know, junior high and high school.
Right.
And then these people that didn't understand this thing was waiting for me and embraced me, whatever it was, comic books, heavy metal, horror movies, all that my nerdy loves were sitting in my tiny room in my mom's shitty apartment. And even when my mom was fighting me, those things were waiting for me in that room. And those were the things that understood me and welcomed me. And I think that's nerd culture is so inclusive of like welcoming to like, hey, you can be a fucking weirdo who can barely form a sentence because right. you're so, you know, you know, OCD or yeah. whatever drew you to this thing, you're welcome. You can have one eye. You can be, you know, 7 feet tall and be 14 years old.
Right. Right.
Which is the way I felt, you know,
right.
and you can be pee the bed and whatever, come in, we'll take you. So then for us to now go, hey, you shitheads.
Yeah, that
you can't like this thing anymore.
Of all the groups that...
But part of me is like, I feel like I've earned that because I've liked this thing. I've been a nerd for 40 years.
Right.
So I think I can go, okay, you're welcome, but dude...
it is interesting that a group
take it down
that a group that that
40,000 racist notches.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like,
it's just weird to me that a group that for a long time was so marginalized culturally,
yeah.
would then turn around and then start marginalizing, like basically building fences and telling everyone else to fuck off. I mean,
that's
I guess,
my biggest thing.
But yeah, I guess yeah. that you know, like if there's trauma, then maybe it's just a defense mechanism. But still. That's why I was, you know, when people would say like, oh, does it piss you off that Comic-Con is about like so many other things now than comics? And I'm like, no, because it welcomes so many people and people don't have to be ashamed. And now we right. get big budget, awesome yeah. movies.
And then go to Emerald City if you just want to go to a con. If you want, there's other cons.
There's lots.
You
know,
like if you just want to go to a comic book convention, there are them.
Right.
You got to seek them out and, you know, and then you can – Comic-Con is its own thing. I have friends that stopped going, and I've gone every year since I moved to Southern California. I've not missed one.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's changed. Like you're right. And maybe it's not as fun sometimes, but I don't know. You make your fun.
Yeah, I just like the community of it. I like that it's, you know, it's welcoming. It's something that happens in real life. With a real experience and real people, and it's accepting,
yeah.
and people can go and not have to feel weird. Like they can right. go and sort of be right in their comfort zone of
right.
like, I'm into this, that person's into that,
right.
and we can find common ground as opposed to feeling like it's the one place where you don't have to feel like an outcast if you're
right.
in whatever town you live in, if there's only like four of you who are right. into this stuff.
And 25 years ago, most of the guys there were like, I wish there were more women there. And now there are. There's
yeah.
so many. And it's you're really complaining about things turning awesome
yeah.
and everybody being into this thing you're into?
Yeah.
Which goes back to me, you know, like I was – mad about Def Leppard and everybody getting into, so I guess I'm sort of a hypocrite. But
yeah, Def Leppard.
But what I mean,
Def Con has really Def Con's actually a hacker convention, so that doesn't even make any sense. I would there would be like a Def Leppard convention. They could sustain it.
Now it would be sad.
Do you think so? Do you still listen? Do you listen to new metal or do you still listen to just the old metal?
I listen to both, and then a lot with the kid. Being in the car, we try to really break it up. Like, we were just listening to Tribe Called Quest on the way up here, so it's not all metal all the time. I think I put that forward that, like, I think people think that that's all I listen to. But, you know, we, like, we have Smith's crossover, yeah. you and I, and, like, I love those bands and, you know,
yeah.
that kind of stuff. I listen to, like, the metalheads that follow me. If they ever rode with me in my car, they'd be like, what the fuck is this?
I would bet most metalheads have a secret a secret stash of stuff that they, you know, but just to stay on brand, you know. But
I like Duran Duran a little more than most dudes would be comfortable with.
Dude, fuck, of course. John and Andy Taylor. That was that Britpop where they basically like almost played bass like a lead guitar. Like those bass lines and those Duran Duran songs are fucking great.
And the cute girls at my school were into that stuff. The girls that I saw at metal shows in San Francisco in the early 80s were fucking terrifying. Like, you never wanted to talk to some of those. A girl at a Slayer show, she'll fucking can kill you.
Yeah.
Like, they look like Richard Ramirez wearing a wig, you know, just most of them back then. Now, another thing, like, metal is totally opened up to women too, but in the beginning, like, the hardcore metal, there were hardly any women at shows, like, you know.
I have to know, though, I'm so curious because, you know, a lot of fandom comes from motivation or what we're going through and what we're attaching our identity to, and the experience for you with metal, I'm sure, was a lot of like real, like legitimate angst and rage and feeling that. And for Rhodes, it's really just more an entertainment offering. This is a type of entertainment that you might enjoy. Because he's not like, what's your kid gonna rebel against?
Right. No, he's not. And now it's like, he likes Pantera because they say bad words.
Yeah.
And he likes Metallica because they're dark.
Yeah.
And he's like, did he just say death? And like, did he just say die, 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 die? And I'm like, yeah, he did. Well, the first one was, one of the lyrics, he just goes, did he just say, look to the sky, it's the last time you will, just before, or look to the sky just before you die, it's the last time you will. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, that's what he said. And he goes, that's really dark. And I'm like, yeah, they're pretty dark, buddy.
Can we get a milkshake?
But he loves it. Like, and he gets that that's one of daddy's favorites. I was never the metal dad of like forcing it on the kid. And I was never the guy that was going to have the YouTube video of the baby. You know, you're playing like the like Sepultura, like some of the really heavy stuff and having the baby headbang.
Yeah.
I never did that. And I, you know, I didn't want to be that dad, but I always played my music, but I just kind of always wanted to give him a foundation. So like in the early days, we were playing Sabbath and AC/DC in the car. And then, you know, with the Ramones and the Clash and, you know, and so he heard all of that, like at 2 years old, he was in the back singing along to Ramones and after singing Iron Man.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So that, and with Melanie too, she would never let me just be metal all the time.
So you got to soften it up a little bit for the kid. And then
it's not so much about softening up. It's more about just being open to other things and just, you know.
That's what's hard.
Widening it up.
I think that's what's hard for nerds to do is to be open to other things because so many get, you know, like nerds are very sensitive, hypersensitive, and can be hurt easily.
Right.
And opening up to other things means, you know, risking that you might get hurt. And so it can, you know.
Did you grow up with other nerd friends, though?
Only a couple. I was in, when I grew up in Memphis, I was in a lot of my nerddom really revolves around one teacher that I had who was the math teacher. He was the high school math teacher, but my school in Memphis was K through 12. Mm. And it was not a lot of people. It was only like, I mean,
right.
If there were 1,000 people there, I'd be surprised for this entire K through 12. And this guy was the math teacher, and he also had a bank of Apple IIe computers, and he also ran the chess club. And so in the entire school of K through 12, there were maybe, it feels like maybe 8 kids, 10 max, but that's 10 spread across K through 12.
Right.
So it's not like the high schoolers were really going to hang out with me. So it was really just the people in the chess club who were in my general age vicinity, which was like maybe 3 people, you know? And that was it. That was it. But everyone else in the school was very binary. It was like, well, you're either a popular kid or you're a sports person or you're just like one of these handful of, you know, people who are just into these things right here.
My thing was so solitary until I met the two metalhead friends where we had that in common. And then we also had other things like our humor kind of overlapped. We were into Letterman and we were the kids that were watching David Letterman.
It's funny how consistent, like, yeah, if people like one thing, there is a Venn diagram that sort of like,
yeah, and they also,
oh, if you like this, you probably,
yeah,
also
we
like
watched
this,
the movie Heavy
like
Metal
Python
on the weekends,
and
we
metal.
Also watched John Carpenter movies,
right?
And, you know, but before those guys, before my two pals that I mentioned in the book, Crop and Baden, were just their last names that we still go by. I'm Posehn and they're Crop and Baden, but those were the guys that, you know, I was like, oh, you like that? Well, I like that. But before that, my nerddom was totally solitary. So I never picked Marvel or DC. And when I was a kid, I liked Star Trek as much as I liked Star Wars back
right.
then. You know, and like, it was always like, you got to pick one. But nobody ever told me that. Nobody, I didn't have a nerd friend that went, oh, you like both? That's weird. You know, like I liked, my two favorite heroes were Batman and Spider-Man since 9 years old. And, you know,
well, now there's so many things in every direction that it's easy to set up tribalism.
Right. But in those days, most nerds were like, I'm a Marvel guy. Make mine Marvel.
Right.
And you would never read a DC book.
Well,
back in the 70s and 80s.
Also, before like home video.
Right.
Star Wars was a movie thing. Star Trek was your TV fix.
Right.
That was
in
syndication
exactly.
that you could see. Like, wasn't. Yeah, it was just like, oh, yeah, any of this kind of stuff is all great because, you know, we just didn't have a lot of stuff. Yeah, the tribalism thing, I don't know. I really. It's unfortunate because it can be so difficult to really have conversations online about stuff with people because you're not really having conversations a lot of the time.
Right.
So I really do think. And that's why I love. That's why I think D&D is so great because it does force you to come to. It forces you to be in a real world experience and interacting and mm-hmm. forming a little community and having to, you know, hang out with people.
Right.
Do you still play? Are you still doing the podcast?
Yes, yes, yes.
Are you? You're not on the same campaign from. How often do you switch campaigns?
So this one, you'd have to ask. Dan Telfer's our DM now.
Okay.
He's been our DM for a while, who you know.
I do know.
So, God, this one's 34 hours in.
Shit.
On this campaign? Or, yeah. And our last one went about the same. I bet
Telfer is a fantastic
DM.
He is.
He's good. Yeah. And people really loved Sark.
Of course.
Know, he was our guy. When we started playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, my first podcast had him, and then we replaced him. He had a kid, and then it's so funny when the D&D, like our D&D first broke up with like Patton and I got married. We stopped playing D&D.
Well, actually, if you remember, the first time our game got disrupted is because Sark got a girlfriend,
right? And then we got mad at him.
You got mad at him. Don't drag me into that shit. You got mad at him, and we ran into him somewhere,
right.
And you were like, what's up, bro? Like, you got real – you can, like, square
I was, but also kind of fucking around
at the same time.
I mean, you know me.
Yeah.
I'll do the
I will note that Brian
thing.
Has turned bright red, P.S.
I'll do the aggressive thing, but the yeah. – God. I love how pot makes me forget, like, certain – and then people will go, no, dude.
No, there was that.
You were the one.
There was that game.
I remember.
There was that game in around 2003 or 2004 where we all set everything up. You guys came to my office. Like, Patton unfolded all of his stuff. He took out his figurines, set everything up.
His mom had sent stuff from the East Coast.
Set everything up, and we were about to play, and he was like, hey, guys, just so you know, I'm probably not going to be able to play much anymore because I got, like, work stuff or whatever. And then proceeded to, like, pack up all his shit and leave. And everyone was like, what the fuck just happened?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a couple of those.
I mean, that's like setting up for a gig. And then, like, some dude unpacks his bass, plugs it in, sets up the pedals, does the sound check, and then goes, yeah, this isn't
that's
working out.
That's a weird Patton thing.
And
I don't
then
know.
Packs everything
you
got
to have him on and make his face red about that. But.
And you can't.
I don't know.
That is the thing with D&D. You can't, if you commit to a, you need to show up.
Right.
Because if one person doesn't show up, it kind of fucks it up for everybody.
Yeah, especially the DM.
But again, as I said, I'm glad Telfer is your
DM.
He's
been great.
He's great and hilarious.
Yeah, it's nerd poker. And that's like what I mean, I was calling it that before it was a podcast. Like I would say to Melanie, I'm going to play nerd poker tonight. Because that's to me what it always was is. and we were all busy then, and we were all, you know, but that was us making time to kind of, because to me it was less about the game and more about hanging with six friends that make you laugh and,
yeah,
you know, and doing this thing that not everybody gets.
Yeah. But now D&D is bigger than it's ever been.
Yeah,
which
it's
is
crazy.
Really cool. Did you see my friend Kyle Newman was part of a group that made this book called Dungeons and Dragons Art and Arcana, a visual history?
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
I know Joe Manganiello.
Yes.
Who did
the foreword
for it. And he's the most handsome nerd to ever live. Have you met that dude?
Oh, I know Joe.
You know Joe.
I think what's going to happen someday is that he's going to slip and fall and his head's going to crack open. It's going to be one of those little tiny aliens like from Men in Black just right. operating this Titan suit. That
or it's two normal-sized nerds. It's two like... they made a 6 foot yeah. five handsome man suit.
And the heavier nerd is his torso.
Yeah, yeah. That dude's all torso. The nerd that's in there, he has no feet. A little tiny little feet.
The book is really stunning in it, and it's sort of and you even kind of getting that sort of the evolution from when it just looked like it was.
I want one. I haven't actually seen it in my hands, but that book, I can't wait to get one.
I got one here in the house.
Nice coffee table book. Yeah,
I'll show you the book. It really is gorgeous. I mean, that when they really did. But even the sort of the charming like line art from the beginning was great, because it just sort of it made you feel like, oh, I can draw like this. This right. feels like this was made for me. And then it got bigger, and then the art got like insane and
yeah.
and vibrant, and that's great too.
And I love how D&D draws a bunch of different types of people to it too. There's the people that are into it for different reasons,
yeah.
you know, that are drawn more to the math of it, or the, you know, the chances of it, or like, you know, the role playing part that,
right.
you know, there's all these different elements and that, like in the 70s and 80s, it was this thing where either nerds played it or dirtbags played it. Like, you know what I mean? And the dirtbags are kind of forgotten, but that's how I got into it. Cause I was working with the dirtbag kids at a record store. No, it's true.
What do you think attracted the dirtbags to it?
The metalness of it, and the thing that, you know, the rebellion thing of like of people saying it, you know, comparing it to the band Kiss. Like Kiss was like Knights in Satan's Service in the 70s. There
right.
was stuff on TV going, this is evil. And then us going, it is? Oh, shit. Well, right. I got to play that.
Yep. Yep.
You know, because it was the nerds started it. You know, it was all like, you know, UC Berkeley type guys, you know, playing it originally. And then it was, you know, frowned upon by churches. And I think that's literally what drew dirtbags to it, of like, oh, I'm not supposed to like that thing? That sounds fucking
anything
awesome.
Anything frowned upon by churches is like totally yeah. in that community.
Yeah, just sitting around, what do churches not like? What should I get into?
But especially if you think about even music at that time,
right.
I mean, fucking Led Zeppelin singing about Tolkien, you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, that was really nerdy, but that was 70s though. But by the 80s, there was that 80s went so conservative, and especially on TV, of like,
right.
you know, there was every news program was telling my mom to tell me not to let me do the stuff I was doing. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, all the programs were too violent. Even in the early 80s, you know, that went through. It seems like we have that like every 10 years of like things, you know, because we got it again in the 90s with Marilyn Manson and stuff like that. But in the early 80s, it was all this music that wasn't really brutal, like Twisted Sister. You know, they're a goofy, you know, East Coast like Kiss band, and they were like taking a chord of like. It's like, yeah, no, if you idiots really
satire.
Read their, if you really read their lyrics, you wouldn't be scared of them. They're
also
a bunch of buffoons.
I
listen to them.
I always just kind of thought of them as sort of like a bit of a satirical.
Yeah,
it'd almost be like charging people at the UCB with
right.
you know, the crimes again. It's like, well, they're fucking around.
Yeah, well, and they have a song called "You're Gonna Burn in Hell," but have you listened to it? It's goofy.
Well, that's why it's so funny now. Like, it's harder and harder because when the rest of the sort of when the rest of the entertainment sectors are like, we really need to drill down and make family friendly stuff. Video games are like, hey, fuck all you, just come over here.
Yeah.
Like I feel like those days of there's just too many Do you think there are too many entertainment options? I feel overwhelmed most of the time because it's just impossible to keep up with anything.
Right. But no, I don't think there's too many because there's so many people. There's just so much stuff for all these people, you know, that you're not all into. You know, I love that there's all these Marvel and DC shows now, and I don't watch all of them.
Right.
But I love that they all exist.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm so late to the table on almost everything cool. Like, I just finally watched season one of Legion.
Yeah.
But I love that thing, and I love that it's out there and that it exists, but... Took me 2.5 years to watch it. But.
Yeah, there's so much of it woven in. We've been watching The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is funny.
I can't believe that can be good. I heard it's good.
It's fun. It's really fun. My only complaint is that I just wish there was more magic in it.
Oh, okay.
But it's all satanic.
Oh, okay. I'm in.
Yeah. So, like, one of the characters the other day.
Tell me not to watch it.
Yeah, and they refer to Christianity as the group that represents the false god. And it's just basically her kind of trying to establish herself as a half-witch, half-mortal in the Church of Satan, basically.
Okay.
And so there's a – someone said the other day – so everything is like opposite, you know? So someone the other day said, unholy shit, which I thought was goofy and funny. Yeah. So it's just a lot of – you know, it's
right.
It's
I never watched Riverdale, but I heard it was – because there's a spinoff of that, right?
It technically is a spinoff of that.
Well, it's from that world.
It's from that world. It's in that universe, but it's on Netflix.
Oh, was Riverdale not?
Riverdale's on CW.
Oh, okay.
So cool. I would imagine the shows would have to touch at some point because Lydia watches Riverdale, and she said this season is like all of a sudden just gotten supernatural. Before it was like a murder mystery, and this season like there's like floating babies. Like within the first – she was like, yeah, all of a sudden it's just supernatural, and they didn't really
– Well, I don't read the comics, but I know like Jughead has gone that way or Archie. Yeah, I think they've done that with those main characters, like the modern versions of those characters.
Well, they did that zombie run on in the Archie comics.
Yeah, I'm aware of it, but I never picked it up or read it. But
my only – the only weird thing – well, the kind of the weird thing to me about Riverdale is that it's everyone is stunning to look at.
It's television.
It is, but even so, like they made Miss Grundy. Was that her name, Mrs. Grundy, the teacher?
I think so.
In the comics, she's like 100 years old, and then she's like young and had an affair with one of the characters, and so
that's like everything. I talk about my act now of you know, the weirdest thing about the last couple of years, people complain about Trump and everything, but the weirdest thing for me is that I now find Spider-Man's aunt attractive. of all things in life, that's one of the most confusing to me. Like, I hated Aunt May as a teenager. Like, she ruined every issue where she came in and like, stay out of Manhattan.
Oh, Aunt
May. That menacing Spider-Man. And now she's this woman who I found attractive since the 90s.
Right.
So, like, you know. And the same with Ma Kent. Where I'm like, Diane Lane is Ma Kent, and I want to fuck Ma Kent.
Jesus Christ.
And I'm glad Pa Kent dies. Because I can have her to myself.
I don't think you just automatically get to date her. You know, there's a lot of things.
Yeah,
like,
sorry, Superman, I'm fucking your mom.
No.
Yep.
Again, you're married, she's not real. Like, there's a lot of things that aren't going to make this work out, Brian. Besides, do you really want to, you know, Superman has a dark streak in him. Do you really want to?
That's true.
Do you really want
now?
Now. That now he does.
Yes.
But I just, you know, I don't know if that's a road you necessarily want to go down.
All right.
What are you excited about?
I haven't told Melanie I'm leaving her for
for Ma Kent.
For Ma Kent.
Yeah, I think Melanie would just kind of roll her eyes and go, fine.
You fucking idiot. Go ahead. Yeah. Like most things I do, she just goes, all right, weirdo.
Your wife's great.
Yeah.
I really love Mel a lot.
She'd have to be.
She. What is Melanie exposing Rhodes to?
Sweetness. No, I mean it. She's just she's so good and, you know, caring, and she's just been a great mom. And but also musically, she sings a lot, and that he's become musical mostly because of her, because I can't really do anything. He plays the piano now, and that's been a big thing of hers, of like giving him this skill that he may not want at 9 years old.
Right.
But you know, guys that we know, like Brendan Small, you know, and some of my metal friends that learned to play the piano and learned to read music at that young age.
So what's going to happen if Rhodes... he gets this music bug and he becomes like a singer-songwriter type, and then writes a lot of "You're beautiful." Like, are you gonna Brian just like you visibly
that's
shifted
hilarious.
In his chair.
Well, I hadn't thought of that one. But I've thought of different variations of him rebelling.
Good job, son. Yeah, I really enjoy your concert.
Well, that's why I play Pantera. So maybe he'll do that, but then he'll go, "You're beautiful."
Either that, or he'll just completely push back.
No, that's the way he's going to rebel is going conservative and like and Sublime. That would be really it.
and he'll just be shitty
food.
He'll be in his concert, and somehow he'll have adopted a soft British accent and say, "This next song is for my father who..." really doesn't understand what I do, but I know he tries in his own way.
Why does he have a British accent?
He just softened him up, you know? Like, it just sort of made him... It just sort of made him more, you know, just... I don't know. Just more of that singer-songwriter guy. Like, that he would have to. He would have to just develop that accent for these types of songs. And in that situation, are you standing off to the side, like... cheering him on, or do you do the like?
I always cheer him on it, because my mom, for all the problems I had with her, like as soon as I got into comedy, she was like, "Oh, thank God,
he's not going to murder anybody."
She was like, "He found this thing." Like, she went and watched me see or do it maybe the third time on stage, and it was rough, and she'll still remind me that it was rough. That's her, you know, but. But she also, at the same time, was like, "This is great that you love this." It's more about that. And then, like, later on, she would be kind of the, you know, the stuff that I was more typical of hearing from her of like, "Well, I don't get it."
Right.
"But that's great that you love it." But I wasn't even obsessed with the fact that she didn't like it. I was just more happy that she was like, "Go ahead."
Right.
You know? And I'm less worried. There was this thing of, like... you know, because I was one of those kids that didn't know what he was going to do and, you know, barely made it out of high school. And then, you know, was going to junior college and still didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't living with her anymore because I had fucked up so much there. And I was living with my grandfather in Sacramento, you know, and working at a McDonald's. And, like, future did not look bright, you know, at age 20. And then I was like, "Hey, I love this thing. I'm going to do this." And then dropped out of junior college that I was barely, you know, showing up for anyway. You know?
"Someday I'm going to be in TV and movies, and I'm going to marry a really pretty brown lady, and we're going to have a child, and then I'm going to get paid to play D&D. Fucking make the fries, you stupid nerd."
Yep. Amazingly, the guys I worked with, one of the buddies I worked with at McDonald's, he was the guy that was like, "No, you should do that." Like, because I was the guy who was making everybody laugh on the fry line. and in the drive-thru, and you know.
Have you ever talked about working at McDonald's on stage?
No, not really. I worked at two, and I worked at I took every like fast food job I could get because they were the easiest, and and you'd just walk in, and if you could talk in complete sentences, you know, they would hire you immediately, and they'd, you know, would barely look at like where you had worked before or call those places.
What is there a good McDonald's secret revealed that people should know about?
No. And you would think that would have thrown me off ever eating their food, but I still like, no, because it is, when you work there, you get the feeling that it's all one thing.
Gotcha.
You know, and it just comes to the store frozen in a box.
That's
everything.
I think there's an old Steve Martin bit about that where he's like, there's just a vat of this stuff and it just spits out like cheeseburger, fries,
Yes.
Yeah, here's your change.
Yeah, exactly. It was that bit. Yeah.
Is your book out yet?
Yes,
or is it coming
came
out
last Tuesday?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's did you first... like writing it?
I did, but I was so stressed. It was so much work. You wrote more
did,
than
I,
one. Have you written?
I just
one,
wrote one,
one
book.
Run?
Yeah. And
did
I haven't
take
since.
A year of your life or
it took, it actually, it happened really fast. I wrote the first draft in 3 months. And then I wrote.
That is fast.
And then I wrote the because we had a deadline when they bought it. They were like, "Okay, maybe we can turn it around for next year." So it was like a year from the time I sold it to when they released it, which meant I wrote it in 3 months. And then I got the edits back. And then I had to basically write it again, and that was in like a month. So it was.
Wow.
I was under the gun.
My whole writing process took a year of like. I think the first draft was 7 months, 7 or 8 months, and then rewriting the rest of the year. But, yeah, it was the most work I've ever done on anything, you know, and I still, like, looking at the reading one reading copy that came out was, like, I've done two edits since then. But the one that's out now, the first edition, there's still, like, typos in it that drive me fucking crazy. But, like, I'm signing them the other day going, oh, sorry, it's not perfect, but, you know.
Well, in 60,000 like, words
yeah,
or whatever
yeah,
it is.
85,000
words.
Yeah, yeah.
A few of them might not be perfect.
Right. 23.
23.
Listeners, if you can find more than 23 typos, you
don't
win
tell
the
me.
You win the Marvel No Prize.
And so this book is essentially a memoir.
Yeah, it's a lot of the stuff we talked about today. You know, just growing up and like my old bit talked about, you know, you don't you're not born a nerd. You find nerdiness. Mm-hmm. You become a nerd, and it's really that. It tells that story because it's called Forever Nerdy, and it's just about it's my life, but it's also tied to nerdiness through the whole thing.
Yeah,
and these things that I found at 10 and 11 years old, like you were saying earlier, of like now I get paid for those. You know, like almost everything that I liked as a kid, like. Horror movies winding up in Devil's Rejects and because of you, but you know, all these things, writing for Deadpool and you know, all the way everything that I liked at 10 years old, and like I might even be in a Star Wars thing, wink wink,
holy shit.
Yeah, so
and is this in the and so you can't confirm or deny that this might be a thing? Oh, I can't hear you. You're whispering off the side of your mouth.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
Are you, what is
but it? But that's the one where I and then like Mad Magazine. It's just really crazy, of like, and it was never like as a 10-year-old. I wasn't like I'm going to do all these things. It was just like I love these things, and I kind of don't know what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Sort you know? Of being in like, service to that kid and realizing all that stuff. Do you ever feel? Do you ever have those moments where you get? Frustrated with something or like, oh, I got a fucking, oh, wait, this is like Mad Magazine or this is this thing. This is the thing that I actually
sometimes
can't
on the
believe
set,
I'm lucky that I get to
sometimes
do.
Sometimes on sets, I'll be the actors that's mad because he's been in his trailer for 5 hours.
Right.
And hasn't acted yet.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes some days like that, because I've got so much shit on my plate too.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm wasting my time. But then the other part of me is like, you're in a fucking trailer and you're just walking in and saying dumb shit and you this is the dream, you know? Shut
up. It is
up.
The dream. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the only times, every once in a while.
Yeah, it's just important to take a step back and always remember,
right.
You know.
And that's what wives are for too, of like, you know.
Reminding you that you're being an idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
idiot.
Lydia does that constantly.
Yeah, right.
But we're so you know, as even though I feel like I did raise some points that might have seemed negative, like about fandom being broken or whatever. In general, I do think it's an amazing time to be alive.
It really is, yeah.
We have a gluttony of amazing things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just sometimes we have to just take a step back and appreciate
right.
that we are lucky, you know,
right.
Like people are living longer than ever before. We have a ton of incredible things that we get to do. We have an
right.
amazing technology. We can connect to people.
Right.
Like we don't have to feel as isolated anymore,
right.
You know, like, I don't know. It's just, it is a pretty incredible time to be alive. Despite, I know there's a lot of shit that's going on, but if you can shove that out of the way for a second and just sort of focus on
these next 24 or these last 24 years
are going to be the best.
They're going to be so good.
We're
going
to go out on such a bang.
Yeah, yeah. What's that last year going to be like? Are people just going to be fucking in the streets and
it'll look like stabbing, 12 monkeys. Shooting. They'll just be like all the zoo animals
be the
are in the streets.
Purge every day, just
every day.
The purge will be one day where you don't purge.
Yeah,
it'll be just one day where everybody kind of hangs out.
And that'll be the most popular movie. Yeah. Is basically just like a regular. It's a movie about a couple who has a regular sit down dinner and no one dies.
Right,
and then they just appreciate each other, as opposed to just like a Mad Max kind of a thing where a guy is fucking a zebra while firing flamethrowers out of both hands.
Yeah, or just. Not even as cool because all the cars will have been destroyed. I just think it's just going to be a dude just wearing underwear with a dirty jug of water just stabbing people. Like, that's the last level is you just go, stay away from my water. Just, that's where it ends.
Now, are you...
Nothing cool or,
How far into the apocalypse would you survive?
First stages.
Like right away.
Yeah, yeah. I probably have 3 more years, Chris. I won't be here for the 24, the running around in the
God
underwear.
Damn it. You can't fucking die in 3 years because then people are going to remember this podcast and be like, he called it. You have to live at least 4 more years.
Right.
But Brian Posehn, your book is available everywhere books are available,
yep.
I would imagine.
Yeah, and I've plugged like the main places like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but go to your independent bookstore.
I will just wander into Powell's in Portland sometime just for the smell of all those books.
I love Powell's.
Go into the
Portland.
Rare book room. It's rad. They only let a certain number of people in at a time. It's on
top
floor.
I have
been
there.
It's fucking great.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's just
love like that place.
Original first edition things, and
there was a guy that was working one day, and he saw me, and it was a Mr. Show guy, and he was like, "Hey, you're gonna love this," and brought me in there, and yeah, it was crazy how cool that store is.
Are they doing any more Mr. Show stuff?
The With Bob and David's?
Yeah, With Bob and David's.
We were talking about it, but I haven't heard lately. Those guys are busy, and it's gonna be when they're not. When they find a window that they can write together, and they were talking about now that Cross is a kid of Bob going to New York, which he can now because his kids are out of the house.
Oh, I thought said because David has a kid, now they're going to do Mr. Show Babies.
No. That is quite a leap.
I'm trying to shit on the flag.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make a boom-boom on the flag.
Yeah, yeah. That baby jumped an acid up to its neck. Oh, man. No, but we were talking about just so he can be home of going to write there for a while, which we've never done. And even they were talking about even producing a season over there on the East Coast.
That'd be great.
Which would be great. I would leave Encino to do that for a month or two.
And then you'd come back for the impending Encino apocalypse.
Yes.
I feel like there's an Encino apocalypse movie for you somewhere.
Oddly, I had thought of like a Red Dawn Encino. It's a bunch of fat white guys defending like a cul-de-sac up in Encino.
That's right. It's like a next Halloween decorations are still up. It's real neighborhoody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Brian Posehn, thank you so much for...
Thanks, dude.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug? Ignored a leaky faucet? Pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
That was Brian Posehn. This is episode 1016 of the ID10T podcast. It's now time for Word Salad Wrap. I'm guessing that if you listen to this podcast and that if you identify with it in any way, you might be an overthinker. So I know it almost sounds like a Foxworthy bit. If you leave a party and obsess about something you said to someone over the avocado dip, and you sit with it for 2 straight weeks worrying that you said something wrong, and you run into that person again, and they have no idea what you were talking about because you invented the whole thing in your head, you might be an overthinker. Overthinking, it means well, right? We want to cover every possibility. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, I was heavily into chess club. Very much into chess club at a time when that was not a sexy thing to do. Thankfully, I think times have changed, but in the 1980s, it was not a very cool thing to do. I just loved it. I fucking loved chess. I loved the game of it. I loved the competition of it. I loved the board. I loved the pieces. And so I played every day before school, during lunch, and after school. I'd play in chess tournaments. And, but on the one hand, I think it taught me to be very analytical, but on the other hand, it also taught me to stress myself out by overthinking hundreds of possibilities. Cause at least the way I played, I never played with, you know, like I'm going to use this opening and that move and then this gambit. I just played every game individually. And so what that meant was that as I was thinking of moves, I was trying to think, you know, 10, 20 moves ahead for a variety of pieces and possibilities. So trying to basically game the entire board in my head with each move, which, of course, is very overwhelming and very stressful, which is why it's very difficult for me to play now leisurely, because I feel like I have to think of every possibility and every eventuality and be prepared for everything. And now it's good to be prepared, obviously, you know, it's like we want to think ahead a little bit. We want to make sure that we're not, you know, just jumping into a fire without really thinking about what we're doing. We want to give things consideration. But at what point are you basically rendering yourselves, ourselves, inoperable by being frozen with too much overwhelming possibilities, many of which will never come to fruition? And so the thing about overthinking is that the good news about it is that it means you're an inventor, because you invent things, but you might be inventing a lot of worst case scenarios, which will not only stress you out, but again, will likely never come to pass. And even if you could, even if they did, even if you thought about it, would you be prepared for it if it happened anyway? You know what I mean? Like, which episode of Doctor Who was it? It was something about, you know, aren't you worried about dying or something? Well, yeah, but why would I want to die twice? In other words, why would you want to go through the stress now and then the thing later? So, but the idea of being an inventor means that you're creative. This is the upside of being a creative. If you're an overthinker, if you come up with scenarios, or if you're in social situations where, you know, you said something or you made some joke or you said something offhandedly, then you sit with it, you invent, oh my God, this person, oh, and then I emailed them, but they never wrote back because they hate me, and they hate me because I suck. I'm just a piece of crap, and everyone hates me, and I always do stupid stuff, oh my God. And then you talk to the person again, they were like, oh yeah, I was on vacation, I didn't really have access to email. And you're like, oh, Jesus. So don't let that become part of your ritual. Don't invent things, you know, when you're kind of stirring in your head, when you're overthinking, really ask yourself out loud, is this real? How realistic are these possibilities? Am I inventing these? Do I have enough empirical evidence that supports this narrative? And if I don't, maybe I'll just try to let it go and just sort of release it into the ether, release it into the universe. And again, as I was saying, because you are a creative type, the good news is that you can invent things. So maybe you know, when you're kind of in those moments where you're inventing horrible scenarios in your head that you're torturing yourself with, you flip it and then you just go create something. You invent something because you're inventing, inventing rods are firing at that point. So maybe use them for good. Use them for something constructive. Just a little exercise. Because if you can even start shaving down your overthinking stress by a few percentage points at a time, then it will, I think, lead to more and less stressful internal interactions with yourself over time. And anywhere where you can just cut off little bits of stress here and there is worth it, in my opinion. IMHO, in my humble opinion. And so good luck with that. And don't beat yourself up for being an overthinker. Try to make sure that it's not just part of a behavioral ritual that you have. And really, really, really work on turning that those kind of inventive moments into things that are constructive, and don't build narratives in your head that are not supported with real evidence and reality. Maybe sometimes you would be right, but most of the time you wouldn't be right with whatever you're inventing in your head. So at least just give yourself the peace until you actually have to deal with shit. So there you go. That's it. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening to Word Salad Rep. I hope you have a wonderful day, week, or whatever. And again, I'll be performing in Washington, D.C., Chicago, and then in New York at Caroline's in October over New York Comic Con. So go to id10t.com/tour for tickets and info to that. And thanks for listening. Bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.